Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in sunny Montclair, New Jersey.
All righty, this is January 1st. We are at the new year. Between last episode and this episode, it seems like it was just yesterday. Holiday fun is all here. Our studio has been closed 4 days over the past few weeks. So 2 days on Christmas week, 2 days on New Year's week, and something that only happens this time of year. We have had some fun with a TLC Creative. We had a team lunch at one of the local restaurants. It was super fun. We had a White Elephant gift. You guys know what a White Elephant is? You guys do White Elephants?
I have in the past. Is that where it's like $20 and
exactly? Yeah, we have a $20 max. You pick a gift there, and actually, we do it really cool. Lori set it up a couple of years back. We have the same Christmas gift bag, so you can't even tell what's in it because there are all these giant, oversized gift bags, and you know, so you pick one and you go with what you wanted, and you know, you see what you got, and then if you like it, you may get to keep it, and if not, somebody may steal it, and you know, it goes around a big circle. It was fun. So 2019 now is our 20th year of doing corporate shows, corporate presentations, and we're going into the new year with the most full calendar of projects and shows we've ever had. And I pretty much can guarantee I have fun stories of presentation at live events through at least next November, looking at my calendar. How about you guys? What's happening?
I'm doing some very sexy projects, like a marketing piece for a prostate drug.
I literally had to draw a colon yesterday. A colon,
like the human colon.
A human colon.
Nice. Well, let's get together and we'll. This is from the same client that I did the cocaine ads for.
Oh,
I love it.
Never a dull moment with them.
Well, I have a house full of relatives, but I'm still squeezing in the year-end rush projects that we've mentioned.
So we're all busy. It's all been holiday fun.
All good.
Well, official Happy New Year 2019. Based on our first and third Tuesday release schedule for this podcast we created way back in 2016, today, the first podcast of 2019 that probably everyone has received for the year, it releases on the first day of the year because January 1st, 2019 is the first Tuesday of the month. So serendipity, here we are. We're talking to everybody on New Year's Day. Nolan, Sandra, myself, we are starting the year. I decided this to be a kind of a fun conversation to have at the start of the year about the presentation design brief, or what details do we gather to start a new presentation project? Well, here we go. Conversation time. And as a start to 2019, I kind of created this conversation to talk about the start of every presentation project. And we are going to emphasize it is for a presentation design project. We all do other types of work, but we're going to talk strictly PowerPoint presentations. But before we jump into this conversation, I wanted to kind of hijack a few moments here, Sandy and Nolan, to define what a brief is the first thing we're going to do. But before that, I want to say thank you to John Quinn out in New Zealand from Audience Live, who indirectly helped with this presentation podcast episode conversation topic.
And how did John help with the conversation?
Well, on the last podcast, I actually made reference to this, and I really, really think this is a cool thing. The Presentation Guild has... their Q&A forum has recently taken a turn towards becoming a discussion forum where a topic is posed, it's not really a question. It's like, hey, here's a good topic for the presentation or the design industry. Let's get everybody's input on it. Everyone contributes their experience and ideas as a community conversation kind of evolves. John not only added some great insights to a discussion on, now this is really funny. There's a discussion thread on Project Scope Creep. It was ironically started just before our episode on the same topic came out, but we had already recorded it. So there is no correlation. Like, we recorded this topic and somebody posted, it was really cool. It's kind of funny.
It was perfect timing, but basically, yeah.
Anyways, John not only added some great conversation, but he was willing to provide a download of several of his company, forms and documents that they use for setting up projects. And there was some really good information. As I read through it, what struck me is, hey, these are like virtually the same questions that I ask.
Exactly.
So thanks, John. You kind of indirectly influenced the conversation here. It was a great conversation starter because I, looking at your forms, I was like, these are like what I do. So I thought it'd be cool for the three of us to compare notes and see what we do.
Sure. So we're talking about like literal forms and literal intent.
Well, not necessarily the form, but the format of what you collect.
Okay. Well, so then let's start with the basics. What do each of us call our pre-project information stage?
Before we start, I don't know if I have a formal name for it, like client interview or research gathering or
okay.
I don't know, before you sign the contract. I don't know.
Okay. I usually tell my clients that we're going to go through a discovery phase.
Ooh, I like that.
So my big question for you guys is, do you have a formal like sheet of paper or form that you use either for yourself or that you have a client fill out? I have a list of questions. Some are in my head. Some, you know, for certain projects like templates, especially, I do have them all written down. But I used to use a form, which I'd love to talk about and actually go through a bit in my agency days. But now I prefer to have that conversation on the phone and just sort of take all my notes rather than having a client fill anything out. So what do you guys do?
You know, when I was in the ad agency world, we did send the creative brief to the client, and I don't, as a rule, do that anymore. I use my presentation creative brief. I may complete it, but it may not be me always completing the form. I have those questions embedded in my brain. And so I'll be asking them, interviewing the client and writing them on a note. If the project scope is really large, or the assignment, maybe creative assignment is more complex, I might complete the form and have them sign it, but rarely.
So this may be like almost a side conversation, but as I said, we have a OneNote, I'll call it a form, but it's basically a list and it has all the types of projects. We'll delete the project information, the type we don't need. And that's for our internal use. But then we turn around, we give the client a design brief to say, here's what we understand the project is. Here's what we're agreeing upon. You know, it's kind of our... to me, that's the brief. You know, we're here's the summary of what we're doing. So I don't have the client fill out anything. We do, but the client does see a summary of it, I guess I'd say. So mm-hmm. Just a whole nother.
Okay.
So maybe we're not as similar as I thought.
I use I don't have an actual form, but I put everything into an Evernote note, just project. Project details and everything. And again, I also have a Evernote note for template projects, all the questions that need to be asked. But as with Sandy, a lot of this is sort of in my head. Mm-hmm. And some projects require a lot more of a conversation. Some require less. But I've always been of the, at least now, I want to talk to the client. Like I don't want to ask them to fill out a form. Like because I wouldn't want to fill out a form as a client.
I have to tell you that there are certain clients and you have to become familiar with their style, but sometimes going through those formal steps trips them up. They become intimidated by the blueprint, the brief. Certain clients, like the brainstorming process, I can't implement with them because they just want me to estimate and do it. Do it for them.
Well, and I think there's a difference between repeat client and new client, because new client, we have to gather so much data. Repeat client, we literally get an email. Here's 30 slides, please format. Like exactly. That's the entire communication cycle. And we look at it and we pull it together. We may follow up with an email or two, but we can put together almost our entire design brief based on that one line. It's really looking at the file because we know everything else already.
So that just made me think, you know, even with those quick ones, do you have a set of basics, for example, company, contact name, info? What are some of the basics, generic things that you capture for every single project?
Well, the super basic ones are the client name, the project name, the client contact. This, again, might be getting into something else, but I, just in the last year, I've started identifying projects with those things, but definitely with the client's first name, the contact name, because I tend to have multiple projects for individual clients, and it's rare that I'll have more than one project for any specific one person. And so when I'm looking at a bunch of folders all with, you know, Acme, if one says Jim, one says Joe, like I can easily pick that out and I can throw the email in the appropriate folder or the, you know, whatever. So that's been helping me in the last year to sort of differentiate the six or seven projects for the one client, one company.
So this information is what I capture for my QuickBooks entry. My QuickBooks is set up for by company name, and then underneath it, the project code. I assign a project number code to every new project that comes in, so I can easily search for it by project number. I do add a description, and also I enter the client's purchase order number if that's needed.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of clients do that.
Yeah, so we're going to capture pretty much like you, Nolan, who the company is, who the client that we're working for is. The same thing. We have large corporations and we'll get contacted by 5-6 different people for different projects. So we go through all that. We assign a job name, which is at the maximum 3 words. So, you know, when I look at my job folder, this one is literally called TLC's the company. It has a job number, which is assigned by our project management system. And then this is called the presentation podcast. So I can look for this a couple of different ways. I can look for this for all projects under the company, which would be TLC. I can look for this under its direct unique job number, which was assigned by the project management system, similar to the way you're using QuickBooks, Sandy, because it assigns a number. And then I can look for it by the actual project. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. And then we also give a one-line description. That's very important for us. We put a one-line description because that shows up in a couple of our different reports. So it's got to be a one-line summary of what it is we're going to do.
And do you capture different things for repeat clients or brand new clients?
Oh, yeah. I think, let's go with this for an example project. Let's say this is a repeat client. So we kind of already know about the content. We know about the template. We know about their styling preferences. What do you add to the brief to direct the design needs? Let's take it down like a theoretical. You know, I'm thinking like type of presentation, where is it being presented? Is it an internal or external audience? Because all those things are going to make differences on the type of content as well as, well, the styling. If it's going to be a large live event presentation, I'm going to want minimal text, higher visuals, but it'll also direct me like, hey, is there going to be presenter notes? I may need to be thinking about that. So I'm going to go with, if it's a repeat client, there's not a lot of that information is not captured because it's known and it's kind of historical. Does that make sense? Am I going down the right path? Yep. How about you, Nolan?
Audience, project timing.
That's a good one.
Time of the presentation. That's something I always just hammer home and always want to know. It's like, you know, how long do you have to present? That's just a huge determining thing for me.
For the content, for how the styling is, and what type of content's going to be in it.
And the scope of it.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes clients will, when we're in a project, and they'll start throwing slides at me, like more and more content. And I'll go back to that. I say, do you still have 20 minutes to present?
Exactly. Yeah.
And they'll say, oh no, I now have an hour. It's like, okay. Or oh yes, I still have 20 minutes. And thank you for checking.
And I'm going to click fast. Yeah, I love that line.
Yeah. What you guys said, I basically all of that, but I also, once we've talked about the target audience, I want to understand where they are in the continuum. So what's their current attitude? what's the desired attitude? I think Nolan calls it mood.
Oh, yeah. And again, that's driving the content and the styling of the slides, I would assume.
Yes, exactly. I ask questions like, are they aware of the problem? Or are you introducing them to the problem? Where are they? Are they going to be surprised? And if it's a sales presentation, are they already buying your product and you want them to switch over to the new one you're launching? So things like that.
Again, we're capturing information to help us direct the content or make sure the client's on track. They're not getting down a little rabbit hole with, hey, this is really cool, but does it actually meet an objective of this presentation? You need that insight to be able to give feedback, I think.
Yep. Okay. So that's an existing client. What about new clients where you know absolutely nothing about them? And so presumably you need to gain a lot more information.
So back to our standardized project setup list. I mean, I'm just going to read it because we capture this is, again, it's based on a new client, and then we'll strip out the stuff we don't really need for an existing client. And we're going to start with the basics, you know, a lot of technical stuff. What's the aspect ratio you're looking for? Or do you even understand that concept? Or do you know what the meeting is going to use? You know, you're a physician, your sample slides are 4x3, the conference you're going to be at, is it really 4x3? We'll ask about software, you know, PowerPoint and what version. That's become a huge topic. Yeah. Keynote and what version, because that is actually a big topic too, because if we're working at the newest version of Keynote, Keynote doesn't have the niceties of PowerPoint. It's not backwards compatible nearly to the same level. Now that's a good and a bad. And then we'll ask it, you know, the software list, literally it just says other and it's Prezi, Google Slides, et cetera, because you never know what's going to be asked for. Again, the version of PowerPoint, you know, are you Office 365, 2016, because they are different, which I'm actually really excited with PowerPoint 2019 coming out, because we'll finally be able to differentiate Office 365 and PowerPoint 2016. They won't have the same implication. 2013, we actually list ours all the way back to 2007, and it just goes other. But I also ask what platform, because this has come up several times. So if Nolan's bringing me a project, I know he works on a Mac, but as a new client, I don't. And I'm going to, if it's a Mac-based end user, we're going to design the PowerPoint presentation on Mac for PowerPoint. They could also be saying mobile or iPad, or, you know, they could say, I want it as a video. I don't need a presentation. You know, we also ask the type of presentation. Is it a sales presentation, a keynote address, an awards presentation? Is this a document? Lots of other things. We go with the design level. You know, what's their expectation? Is it minimal? Just clean it up, make it clean. Do they want to complete? In other words, I want you to introduce imagery. I want you to introduce more of a visual design to this thing. Is it a scripted element or not? You know, that helps drive the, we ask about animation levels, image attribution. There's a good one. Do you guys capture this? Does the client need image attribution? In other words, did you really use royalty-free images, and can you prove that they're stock photography that we can keep in our presentation? So we've had that come up a few times where we've had to backwards engineer ourselves, like, oh, you really need that for your legal team. Okay, let's go back into our source file, find the image attribution, figure out which, you know, where we acquired it from, and then put it in. So yeah, that I've added that to our upfront.
Buy a new one.
So that's become one of our standardized questions now. And again, a new client, we're going to ask that more than existing client. Existing client, we're going to already know.
With certain clients, I'll ask if they need it to be Creative Commons. I had one client, a couple situations in the past with some foundation clients where we designed the presentation, and at the end they said, "Oh, now we want to put this up on SlideShare or something else." Mm-hmm. SlideShare even exists anymore. And they said, everything's Creative Commons, right? I was like, no. So with certain clients, I'll ask, like, do you want to share this? And a lot of times they'll say, oh, I want to. And then I'll say, okay, well, here's why that's so difficult. We can do it. And usually they back down. But it's nice to have that conversation
before. Actually, you know, I might add that to mine along image attribution. If they say yes, I might, yeah, I think that's a really good point. Can it be royalty-free, or does it need to be CC, you know, Creative Commons.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you listen to the podcast.
I gained something out of this. Sandy, what do you do? What do you capture while I type my notes?
Okay. Well, pretty much everything you said. I also ask about a link to their asset library, and I'll include that on the brief or, you know, the link. Ask them to send me the link if they already have the images that I'm required to use, or an icon library. Perhaps also the corporation has voice guidelines in their brand guidelines, and they want the presentation. I'll ask them, a corporation will have guidelines, but let's say it's not a corporation, it's a keynote. So I'll ask about the tone. And I misspoke earlier when I mentioned mood from Nolan. Mm-hmm. I call it tone. Nolan, I believe you call it mood, but do you want the presentation to be warm? Do you want it to be humorous? Do you want it to be emotional, strategic, businesslike? I ask those kinds of words.
Do you use that voice when you ask it too? Because that really implies.
Indeed.
So again, I don't use a form now, but I do want to sort of go through this maybe in a little bit, this Edelman form that we created when I was at Edelman, this large agency thing. For mood, we actually put images on this form. It was an interactive PDF that they could just check off things.
Oh, but under cool.
Mood, you know, we had digital tech, you know, beauty or fashion, clean, simple, hip, fun, but we put little thumbnail images so they could get a sense of,
what does hip fun mean?
And they could just check those off. And, you know, even with all project briefs, it does lead to conversations, but it gets them thinking. And you had mentioned before, you know, is some clients don't want this hassle of writing it out, but at the same time, some clients, this gets them thinking about things that they didn't.
They ought to.
They should, exactly. Mm-hmm. And again, we'll talk about that specifically within, if you're giving this to somebody within a company, there are other considerations that they need to think about.
You know, that triggers another one. Do you ask if there are brand guidelines?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Yeah. Especially with a new client. That's one of the first things I'll ask. But also, not just do they have brand guidelines, but do we have to follow them? Do they want us to follow them? And, or how closely do we want them followed? Sometimes they'll send a brand guidelines and say, please don't use these. And I'll say, okay, just because, you know, they hate them.
What about other presentation delivery info? I mean, we're covering all the basics, but so Sandy, I know you have your whole form where you're going to go over, you're kind of alluding to it, you know, what's the emotion to it, but you'll ask what the actual end deliverable is. Is this
exactly,
you know, strategic, or, I mean, I know you have a listing of them. Well, so I'm picking on you because you're organized.
Objective, call to action, size of the audience. You know, if I'm in it, I want to know the size. Let's say it's a keynote. I want, is it 100? Is it 1,000? That all has an impact on what we do, right, Troy, with mm-hmm. your big scale presentations. I don't do those, but I would turn it over to you if it were. we talked about it. The strategy, the approach to the presentation. Are there other presenters involved?
Yeah, I'm going to go. Audience size is actually really critical, because if it's a small conference room on a screen that's mounted there versus a large event where you're going to have dual screens and people sitting, you know, up to 80 feet away, you definitely need to consider what. That's part of the delivery, the presentation portion of the presentation. And I ask a lot of questions about that. There's more to it.
I mean, I'll ask Troy, you're more close to these things very often, but if I'm creating something for somebody that will be giving it at a conference, I will ask for anything that the conference has told them. Mm-hmm. Timing guidelines, design guidelines, anything. And then in some cases I'll ask to actually talk directly to the conference or to the AV people.
All perfect.
Yeah. What about, did we talk about software versions yet?
A little bit, but I guess why would you ask the question if you do ask the question?
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of my regular clients now are on Office 365, so, you know, we don't even have that conversation. But if I'm ever using Morph, I will always confirm. Or if I ever think I want to use Morph, I'll always confirm. And not only do they have it, but what other computers will be potentially showing this presentation? That's a big one for me.
I ask for videos so that I can, you know, I'll either embed an MP4 or WMV for the older versions.
So I'll ask for the videos, or we'll extract the videos, because a lot of times for our stuff, it's a live meeting. And I know we're going to be handing off the video to a video playback system. It's not going to actually run in PowerPoint. Right. So we'll have a version in PowerPoint for, you know, this just happened a couple of weeks ago when I was doing this project. All the videos were external and they were really nice videos, but they were also Apple ProRes 1920 by 1080, but they were just huge. I mean, the video folder, there was about a dozen folders, but it was about a dozen videos, but it was about 10 gigs of files. So, you know, do the math there and you go, hey, these are big videos. And they weren't extremely long. They were just super, super high quality, high bit rate and everything else. So I actually took them and created a rehearsal set of videos because I wanted to drop those into the presentation so everybody could see where they play. Not a part of the presentation brief. That's more like, here's the process. But I do want to have videos available always.
Regardless of version.
What about in terms of content that the client will be sending you, how they're going to provide the content?
as example, if we ask the client, if the client will be sending a base set of slides to work from, and I'm careful to not call those a presentation because we're delivering the professional presentation, anything they give to us, the client give to us, that's just a bunch of slides. It's not a presentation yet. We will provide. Will it be an outline? And outlines are, it could be a Word doc. It could be an email. It could be a handwritten. I mean, I've received scans or photos of handwritten notes, So I had a project where we got the answer to that question is, hey, how are you going to be providing it? The answer was, it's all written in the book that I wrote. I'm like, well, wait, that's a project in and of itself. That's content research and development. We do that, but that's not part of a presentation makeover. It was kind of funny.
Troy, totally an aside. I once asked that question of a client. He said, it's all going to be in the book that so-and-so wrote. Somebody
else. Oh, that's even better.
Well, no. And then I said, okay, and this, do you have permission to use it? Yeah. All of that stuff. I ended up not working on the project because I don't think he ever got permission.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Again, sort of a side thing, but when client, I do sometimes caution people when I say, if they say they're going to send me an outline, which I'll walk them through how to do it, I'll say, what is not helpful is if you say, on this slide, I will talk about my research results.
Right.
Because I get that a lot. And I'll call them up and say, but they'll say, oh, well, I'll put that in later. Just go ahead and design it. I was like, So that is not a helpful outline.
No.
Sandy, what about you? Anything else on content?
This is something that's not on my brief right now. It should be, but I do always ask the question. I've received everything. Literally, I know this sounds kind of trite, but I always, I've received sketches on napkins for presentations. They look pretty darn good.
Kind of adorable.
For a whole presentation or like a slide?
Two or three slides.
Okay.
Okay.
I've gotten hand sketches.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun. Of course, there is the, I know you both have received this, 5 or 6 or more old decks that I need to meld together. Okay, well, you're going to find in a lot of duplicates. So we're ending up going through it and identifying what could be duplicates, but they're not duplicate. It's just a nightmare. But, I've done that.
Well, what about PowerPoint templates? Is there anything you're asking about the template? Does it exist? Does it not exist? Are we using one? Do you think you have one but don't really have one? All those are questions.
I always ask, yes, does it exist? And most people say we do have a template, but part of the process and the feedback from me is I have to evaluate it when we go through this discovery phase so that I know if it's functional. And that's important for me because as I build your presentation, I am more efficient if I have a functional template. But more importantly, it allows you and your organization to maintain the integrity of the presentation after I step away.
You are so polite. I like that term, functional presentation. Mm-hmm. So a little behind the scenes. Other parts of the thing that we're not going to ask the client, but we're going to notate is, they adjust the estimate. So it's like, do they have a template? Yes or no? And if it's no, are they providing a template or are we designing a template? So if we're designing it, well, that's the baseline. Like the design portion is the lowest rate or the lowest... it's the lowest rate. In other words, there's not going to be an addition to the thing because we know the template's full. What was the term you just used? Full
functional.
Functional. Is it a functional template? Whereas if they're supplying something they think is a template and they won't let us update it, we actually ding them. I mean, that could be a 20% upcharge to the whole thing because we know it's going to take a lot more design time to work with this non-functional piece of slides that they want to call a template. So now we have to do a lot more manual. So anyway, it's a little behind the scenes. It actually can, you know, we can increase our estimate just based on what they provide or what we're going to work with. So template, yeah, it's a huge question for us.
What about notes? Handout, anything having to do with handouts or presenter notes or anything like that?
I always talk about notes.
Like presenter notes in the bottom, or are they going to do print these as handouts? I think that's a huge upfront question because that can drive a lot of, well, a lot of time and a lot of design.
It's part of the conversation when I help prepare them for what is going to come back to them. I talk about less being more on the slides. You're not going to get your bullet points back. I'm going to be moving those to the notes. And then we talk about how those notes can become a practice document. If they want that, that's that. I use export sent to Word all the time, where we have the slides on the left and the notes on the right. If they're interested in that, I'll create that for them. If they want handouts, now that I'm taking everything off the slide, if they want handouts, then we'll talk about creating a custom notes master.
Yes. That
looks like a nice brochure. And we'll do that. So yes, we always have a notes conversation.
Can I add a gripe? I did a custom notes page master for a template for a client a couple of years ago, and I just got an email from one of the guys desperate to know how he can make a PDF out of the notes pages.
Oh.
And I had to walk him through it. It's like a 5 or 6 step process on the PC where I think at 2 times you have to click more options. It's
You mean in the print dialog?
Well, not – well, to save as. You export – I mean, I guess you can go from the print dialog as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But
save in the PDF.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
To save as a PDF and then with it, it's not intuitive at all.
No, I guess I do it so much I don't really think about it, but yeah, you got to know to go in there and say, these are the options. I think it's really funny because it brings up these legacy PowerPoint 2003 dialogues all of a sudden. Some of the dialogues in there are just, they're radio buttons of I want handouts and this and that, and there's no visuals to go with it. And it's, yeah, sometimes you end up in this kind of like really legacy world. Presenter notes are probably more of a conversation for us than handouts. Handouts are really cool, but a lot of times we're actually formatting handouts completely separate outside of the PowerPoint world because they're for conferences and conferences specify what needs to be provided and you just can't bend PowerPoint to those specifications. Now, presenter notes, on the other hand, those are huge because if it's a conference presenter, they need to know, do they actually have, conferences have different things of doing. They may have presenter view available. So we know we want to minimize it to, stay within the presenter view, no scrolling in the presenter view, which is a gripe of mine. Or they may have slides that they call notes slides. And, we got to know how those things are going to be formatted. So yeah, big conversation there because that can dramatically change what we're doing. So speaking of changing, when we're all done with it, what's the final deliverable everybody gives? Like, what are you saying? Here's what we're providing to you at the end of the project.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, often it's just if we're doing presentation, the PowerPoint file, but I will also tell clients that they will get, if we're doing InDesign, that they'll get all their files.
Oh, how do you define all the files? Because this might be interesting.
Well, I mean, I just say you get
like a package.
Yeah. And some designers are against that. I say you'll, it's part of the back and forth conversation about editability and everything where I'll say, I'm happy to give you all my InDesign files, but if you don't have the program, you can't edit it. But with, I don't say source files. Like if we're doing presentation,
that's what I was wondering about right there.
Yeah, I'm not giving them layered Photoshop files. If that was the case.
Well, that's where it gets interesting because InDesign, PowerPoint's totally irrelevant to this conversation. But in InDesign, because now you can use a layered PSD or a native AI file. So if you package, you're going to include that layered PSD and editable AI file. And not every project of ours includes this, what I would call those the source files. And we don't include that. So then do you flatten it and do you create an InDesign file that is ready for deliverable? PowerPoint, Anyways, is that what you're kind of saying before I go off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do. I've never denied a client those files. There's sometimes I often just won't send them initially because they have nothing to, they have no use for them. But I feel that they own them.
Okay.
Other people have differing, that's a different conversation.
Sandy, bring us back to PowerPoint. What do you include?
Yeah, I will describe the deliverable, whether it's a template, a keynote presentation, a sales presentation, the photography to whatever we agreed on in the photography being contained into it. I never deliver anything other than a PDF, a PowerPoint file. Used to be publisher when I did publisher, but I don't deliver Illustrator files or anything like that.
You know, the photos are a really good one because, so we'll include the PowerPoint file. If it's a template design project, we'll include a template. So they have a native file, a template file to always go back to. We don't include Photoshop files, nothing layered. In the upfront brief, it lets them know we're going to supply PDF proofs. And upon approval, we'll give you the editable PowerPoint. But images are kind of interesting. I ran into another designer. I should say I had a conversation with another designer, and they were talking about how they package everything for the end client, for the final deliverable. I was kind of waiting to see if either one of you approach this. They include a file of what they'll call the source imagery. In other words, all the high-res downloaded images. Was like a huge red flag to me. I was like, no, royalty-free for the most part, no legal explanation here, not giving guidance, but the way I'm interpreting it is we can use an image in a project, client have rights to use that image in the project, but you, the client, don't have rights to use that image in other projects because it wasn't secured for you through our licensing. And they just gave them the actual editable or the high res native original files. And I think that was a red flag to me. Yeah, so that's not part of the deliverables.
Nope.
What about timelines?
Ooh, how so?
I know what you mean by a timeline, and it's not a part of my brief, but I do include it then in a formal or informal proposal or scope of work, which we've talked about before.
So like the timeline for the deliverable we just talked about.
That's right.
Yeah. I think projects that have a set presentation date are actually easier because you know when the project has to end by and you work backwards and you send a proof and you don't hear back from the client for a while. You just kind of say, hey, we're going to be impacted because now we're off our timeline and that meeting is still coming up on the third of the month, correct? And timeline is usually driven by the deliverable. It's the internal ones where somebody just wants to create the content for the, whatever theoretical date, there's no actual end date to when it's needed. Those ones tend to drag out more, I think, because people get distracted. They have other priorities and it's easier to put off something that's not timeline driven.
Number of revisions or revision process.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's always in mind. Again, I don't have a hard copy thing that I'm filling out, but we're always talking about number of revisions, especially if it's a project rate, because you don't get unlimited revisions.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Do you have a standard? I mean, we do. I have a standard.
It depends. It's like, I don't know. It's one, two, or three.
Okay.
So that's my standard.
So three is your max. Sandy?
Yeah, same here. I usually say two, but...
Oh, okay. We say three, and it's usually three per phase, so maybe we're a little too lenient. For designing a template, we'll first put out concepts. Hey, here's three design concepts you have.
Sure.
We get three tries at that, and then when we do the final, they select one, and we go through it. Here you have, we have three revisions to finalize this, you did want to add this, or oh, that doesn't work, and then we do a presentation. It's the same thing. Standard. And we tell clients all the time, we're like, listen, it's based on three revision requests. Instead of looking at it and sending me an email right away to do one thing and then see what that looks like, that's a revision round. You may want to take it to your team, gather all the input, put it together and give it to us as one revision request. So we're trying to help the client.
Can be a help in negotiating. If a client really has a low budget, has a small budget, and they're really trying to get you down, oh no, I can only 20 hours. Well, great. When the scope goes out, it's you get one revision. And if they start to balk at it, all right, cough up more money. So maybe the last thing, none of us are currently in large agencies, but Sandy, you used to work there and I used to work there. Any considerations for briefs in large agencies, which most agency work does happen with a brief, either an internal brief or one with a client. Do you want to talk at all about that? And then I'll talk about my experience at Edelman.
Well, sure. One of the things that I think is the big difference is it's almost done for legal purposes. And that's an exaggeration, but it's, they hold it against the client. Like, that's what I remember about it, but it says right in the brief. And I know we're talking in the same light, but it just seems more, it's a us versus them kind of document that I try to avoid as much as possible. You know what I mean? I don't want to use it to go back to the client and.
No. I mean, I can count on one hand, you know, the times I've really had to go back. I had to do that this past year with a client that just wouldn't, when I finally exercised a finalization clause, just because it was stretching so long. But again, you know, you put things in contracts and briefs because you hope you never have to use it, but you know, it's there when you need it. So we did some client work when I was at Edelman, and we had project briefs for that. But we ended up doing a lot of internal new business pitching, and eventually we came up with a project brief that I excavated. I dug out of an old hard drive just before we recorded, and I've been looking at it.
It's really cool.
Kind of fascinated by it, and the reason was we were sort of an internal agency for. The agency. So we would get people all over the agency, you know, saying, hey, I've got a big pitch coming. I need your help. And to help manage and triage things, we started putting this thing together. We had the little thumbnails for mood. You know, we had, it was interactive. So it had all these checkboxes in PDF, like instead of, you know, saying what format we had a format, but we would start with what solution do you think you want? You do want a print document, a presentation, a walking deck. You know, we had things for extras and delivery, how's this going to be delivered and sizes, you know, a whole bunch of team names. The agency itself was supposedly had a new business process in place, which I think most agencies do, and then nobody follows them. but this was actually helping to implement that for the agency writ large. So every pitch was supposed to have a team lead and a pitch driver and a senior approver and, you know, things like that. So we would have lines for all that. And if those were blank, we could gently ask them. We could also, like, if we had to, we could go over their head and talk to other people and say, oh, you're pitching for a $1 million project and you don't have a pitch leader. You know, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. We would have things, dates, like when the agency was notified about this pitch. And when they're sending it to us. So if they found out about it, you know, a month before, but then contacted us the day before it was due, that would help us, you know, say no. Sure. It would also, you know, help them understand that you're not going to get our services if you wait to the last minute. And also things like estimated contract value. Again, we were going to prioritize the $1 million pitch over the $5,000.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because we had to pick and choose. And we had to negotiate, and we had just so many resources.
So, question on that, only because this is not my world. I'm definitely the non-large agency person. So, if it wouldn't work for the internal department, did that free them up to go to external resources, contractors?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no rule. They didn't have to use us.
Oh, okay.
But then it was also education too. That sometimes people who hadn't worked with us before would come to us the day before. And then they would realize, oh, okay, if I'm going to work with you, there's some rules. Yes. And
I love it. It's a great form. It's inspirational. And I may be, with all our extra time, converting my current brief to this format. Nolan and I were talking earlier, and there's a submit button. I remember creating a PDF for a project years ago where the submit button once it was completed, generated itself as a spreadsheet. And
awesome. Yeah. Wow.
So that right now my client project list is a spreadsheet, a workbook. And to be able to tie this together would be really, really great.
Yeah, that's cool. Our submit button, that was just, it would just email a copy of it to us. But yeah, apparently you can integrate PowerPoint into Excel, and I've never done
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Or you mean PDF into Excel?
I'm feeling a little left out. Sandy, are you actually looking at Nolan's form? Do I not have it?
I am looking at Nolan's form.
Oh, did you email it? I'm not on email. I didn't open up email. Oh, you know, I'm opening it up on my phone. Look at that. Edelman Creative Brief. That. Hey, I'll look at this later. I was just feeling left out.
Yeah, I'm looking at it again. I was pretty proud of it. I mean, it took a long time to sort of get it together. There was another part of it. My favorite question was, if this is a pitch, what do we need to do to win? And what does the client want to see?
Ooh.
And that was a huge question that a lot of times they just didn't even think about or talk about. And that would get them talking about, oh, what do they really need to see? And, you know, no, they don't need to see our whole history of what we've done. They need to see a solution to their current challenge. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so as the non-large agency person, I've never had direct experience in a large agency. I see a design brief as a way for multiple people, multiple designers, to all have the same bins, you know, the same base information. As a solo designer, the idea of a design presentation brief may not seem as important. I think I have a unique background in the fact that I came from large print industry where there was always a job jacket or, you know, something that provided all the specs about it. So we just adopted that right out of the gate, even when it was just Lori and I. Mm-hmm. But I feel the idea of this whole historical document to explain it is really important for, you know, it keeps you on track. You know, it's same information requests. It's not totally based on your memory.
Right. It's a great practice, I think.
Well, you guys have a definite better approach and knowledge base for putting it all together than I would say most of the people, you know, more than I did. You know, we've developed ours just based on trial and error and the knowledge that we wanted. And now that there's a team of designers behind it, you know, it became more and more a need item. Mm-hmm. And it's evolved. It started off as it was an Excel document, then became a Word document. It had a very cool Word document I was very proud of, and not nearly the level of what you've got in this PDF now that I'm looking at, Nolan. And then now it's moved into, it now goes into Workflow Max, our project management system, but it starts in OneNote, our list, we itemize it, and that goes into the notes section. Anyways, this is a cool conversation. I think, hey, it's the start of a new year, start of projects. You know, the start of the project is probably the most critical thing besides actually delivering it. Because if you don't know what it is you're designing, you end up going out of budget or off the client's requests, and then things don't go well. So thanks. Hopefully, I'm actually surprised. As we started the conversation, I thought we were totally aligned, and then we started off like right at the beginning. I was like, "Oh wait, that's totally different than what I've done." And you know, overall, I think we approach all projects very, very similarly. So this is awesome.
We do
stuff. Well, welcome to 2019. We have now started the new year with a conversation about how to get projects off to the best start with a presentation design brief, because it's not a happy afternoon when you realize some important information for the project is not available and the client's not available at that moment to give you the information, or the presentation design went in one direction only to hear from the client that they were really looking for a different direction. That idea, that upfront design brief really, really, really is invaluable once it's put in place. Hey, enjoy the week. Make great presentations.
Okay, so let's get started with pro tips. Nolan, why don't you go ahead?
Clean My Mac is a small little application only for the Mac, if you couldn't guess, that just runs a whole bunch of diagnostics and everything and just ends up deleting a lot of extra space stuff on your Mac, like unused system files and your garbage and all trash and a whole bunch of different things. So it's actually, I've used it for a number of years now and they keep coming up with different versions. It's an interesting, it will also help get rid of old applications or parts of applications. Very often you'll delete an application, but parts of it will still remain. And so it's a way to really get rid of all that stuff. So it's a nice little utility that has proved its worth over the years. So I like it. Clean My Mac.
Cool. Very cool. Sandy?
Okay. So I want to talk about the ability to use PowerPoint's Merge Shapes tool for editing photos. Do you do that?
explain.
Yeah, I'm not sure which direction you're going, so I don't want to say yes or no. This could be cool.
So you want to remove a back... This is a simple scenario. You want to remove the background of an image. You have several options. One is to use the use PowerPoint's apply transparent color. But if you have a busy background, it only removes one color, correct?
Right.
Okay. The other option is to use PowerPoint's remove background tool.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is very reliable. Sometimes if your colors cross over between the background and what you want to keep, it just doesn't work. The edges, I think, become fuzzy. So the third option is to use the merge shapes tool by doing this. First, I use the freeform drawing tool to outline the area that I want to keep.
Okay.
Then I use the merge shapes tool subtract, and I subtract the background.
Oh, you're making a custom mask.
I am making a custom mask. It's really more accurate, I believe, than the remove background. The backside of this is the crop tool no longer works once you've done that. So I just want people to be aware of that. But
yeah, you still need to apply the format, the remove background.
No, right? I use the subtract shape.
So you're literally hand cutting out?
Yes, which I love to do. I don't know. It's kind of good for my brain. It makes me relax.
Wow. You can be accurate with that? Use a tablet?
Yep. Wow. I wish we could zoom in more.
Oh my gosh. I would love more than 400% zoom. That is like one of my biggest requests that never gets attention.
But I've done it a lot. It's really a great tool to use.
That is definitely a pro tip right there, because you're basically creating vector Bezier curve paths and saying, yeah, you're creating a layer mask. You're creating a mask. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Anybody that's willing to take the time for that, as Sandy does, you're awesome.
It's like old school with an X-Acto.
That's right. Old school with an X-Acto. I learned PowerPoint before I learned Photoshop. So I did a lot of outlining and fake masking. I used to fake mask by drawing in the shape that I wanted to subtract. Then I would make like a contrast color. So if the shape I wanted to keep, the part of the image I wanted to keep was black.
So you could do the selection thing easily?
The transparent tool thing.
Yes. Yep. The one color transparent apply.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Mine's more gadget techie. I'm going to go with, as a really cool tech item, if you have a GoPro, the problem with the GoPro is that the battery in it is just tiny. And, you get 25, maybe 35 minutes out of using a GoPro. So if you're using it for, like we did our way back earlier in the year, we did the presentation summit, and I did a little time lapse of us doing a podcast recording. Well, you couldn't do that on a single battery because we recorded for like an hour and a half. So there is a item called a battery eliminator. It's basically, it slides into the battery bay of a GoPro, and it has the USB cable permanently attached. It has a power cable that goes to USB. So you just plug it in. It's basically permanent power for a GoPro. And I'm really surprised how many people don't know about these. It just came up because over the holidays we had our GoPro out, and there was a little conversation about it, and I was like, oh no, it's just going to run all day. It's fine. It's got 128 gig, capture, and I'm doing a time-lapse capture. It'll just run all day. I'll grab it tonight. And yeah, so these are really cool. They're a battery eliminator for this, basically just a permanent USB power to a GoPro. They're like $20. So if you own a GoPro, go buy one, because it's like definitely worth it.
I just love the title, battery eliminator.
That's what they're called. Yeah, it's really hard to. I'm gonna put a link, because if you don't know what you're looking for, you would have a hard time finding it. And I only know it because a buddy of mine has done for years. He does this amazing for live events. He puts GoPros around the ballroom for the setup. So he'll have 3, 4, 5 GoPros. Some of them are up on long telescoping tripods, they're 15 feet in the air, and other ones are at ground level. And he makes these setup videos for these events that show, not just from one angle. So it's a multi-angled time lapse, and it's really, really cool. And he's used them for a long time, and that's the only reason I knew about them. So thanks, Paul. You're awesome, and you do cool stuff. And those are cool little tech tip. So there. Hey, start of the new year. Everybody's got good things to do. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional design presentation agency. Find out more about us at tlccreative.com. My presentation blog is thepowerpointblog.com. And our Facebook page is a good place for seeing agency-related photos. And that's facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. If your organization is interested in on-site presentation or data viz training, give us a call as well.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org, and I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.